Thank you very much. So what I'm going to do is basically continue from where Georgia left off. So he talked about synchronous rewriting systems, and he talked about factorizing rules and why you need to factorize rules to make the complexity lower. And basically, my goal today is to tell you how to do it, how to do the factorization. And so we're going to do it using tree decomposition, which is something from graph theory. I'll talk about that and then talk about how you use it to do factorization of grammar rules for LCFRS, linear context-free rewriting systems. So let me start by recapping what factorization is. So these are, this is to introduce these diagrams. So if you're doing CYK parsing, you have a CFG grammar rule that looks like this, and the fundamental operation is some kind of deduction step that looks like this. So you build an A out of non-terminals B and C, and each non-terminal comes with some, each entry in your chart is a non-terminal and some position in the string where it starts and some position in the string where it ends. And so this is a picture of this deduction rule, and it's the same format that Georgia used. And the way to read this is to think of the string going from left to right, and you've already found in your chart, you've already recognized a non-terminal B that goes from some position to some other position. You've recognized a C that goes from the same position in the string to some other position, and you combine them to get a new A. Okay, so that's a picture for CYK parsing. And the simplest example of grammar factorization is binarization of context-free grammars. So converting a rule into Chomsky normal form. So if you have a rule with four non-terminals in this on the right-hand side, you can factor it into several rules that recognize one at a time. So maybe first you combine B and C to get some new non-terminal X, then you take the X that you build, you combine it with a non-terminal D to get another new non-terminal Y. Y means you've seen B, C, and D so far. You combine it with E to get the A, the left-hand side of the original rule. And the reason we convert grammars into Chomsky normal form is that if you just applied this deduction step directly, it has five indices into the string. So it would take n to the five time to consider all ways of instantiating this rule with some position here, some position here, some position here, and so on. And so by breaking it into these steps, each of these steps takes time n to the three, because there's one, two, three indices into the string, okay? This is one example of factorizing grammar rules, and I want to talk about the general problem of factorizing grammar rules. So here's another example. So what if we want to do lexicalized parsing? So this would be, we have grammar non-terminals, and every non-terminal comes with a head word. So maybe you combine a verb phrase and a noun phrase to make an S. But the verb phrase, it has some mark that tells you what's the main verb in the verb phrase, what's the main noun in the noun phrase. And so that means that the items in the chart now have three pointers into the string, so beginning and end point for the phrase and a record of what's the head word. And so the combination step looks like this. So combine two items with head words, make a new item with a head word. And the time for this rule would be n to the five. So one, two, three for the boundaries, and then another four or five for the two head words. And this rule can be factored to reduce the complexity as well. So what you can do is take one of the antecedents, guess where the headword of the other antecedent is going to be, forget what this person's headword is, and so we've made some new item that says I've recognized something, I've forgotten its headword, and I've predicted the headword of what it's going to combine with. and then it combines with something with that headword. So each of these steps now just has complexity n to the 4 instead of n to the 5. So this is another example of grammar factorization, and we want a procedure that's going to do this kind of factorization for us automatically for any kind of grammar rule that you give it. So another example is synchronous context-free grammars for machine translation. So here's an example of an SVFG rule. Four non-terminals on the right-hand side. These are the English non-terminals. These are the Czech non-terminals. And there's some superscripts that tell us this C goes with this C. And this this is a rule that's hard to parse because it has this complicated reordering pattern, so this inside-up reordering pattern. And what that looks like in terms of these diagrams is, well, we have something like a CFG rule in English. This looks like the CFG rule before we binarized it. So this is the English side, this is the Czech side, and these, we have the same non-terminals, but they're in some strange pattern. Okay, so this this pattern tells us what the reordering between the two languages is. And if we try to binarize this rule the way we did for CFG rules, well, you can take the two non-terminals at the beginning in English, but you end up with two things that are not adjacent in Czech. And you can keep going, add the next English non-terminal, add the last English non-terminal. And you can get a sequence of three steps. Each step is simpler than the big step that we started with, but exactly what that complexity is depends on how you break it down into steps. And so we want to be able to find the best way to combine non-terminals one at a time. Okay. So in general, we want to take some kind of grammar rule. We want to factor it into a set of rules, a set of intermediate steps. And we can do that to reduce the parsing complexity. The grammar factorization algorithms, everything that I'm going to talk about looks at each rule in the grammar independently. So it's not considering any kind of interactions between different rules in the grammar. And these are the examples that we saw so far. So, yeah.
So maybe in the CFG example of the you do end up creating these new labels, right?
Yep.
Which way should one do? Should we factorize rules so that many rules end up reusing the same X, or because they're parts, you actually want to make them different so that you don't confuse them?
So reusing, if it's possible to reuse the same X, that's a good thing to do.
It's a good thing because you have fewer rules.
Because you have fewer rules, yeah.
And
that's right, yeah.
But then the ambiguity would go up, right?
Because yeah, but it will make parsing faster. And
okay.
For today, we're just going to look at one rule at a time. Okay, so we can reduce CFG from anything to n cubed by lexical parsing from 5 to 4. Synchronous context-free grammar from 2 times the number of non-terminals on the right-hand side to some constant times the number of non-terminals on the right-hand side. In general, we want to do this for large rules, so synchronous context-free grammar rules with lots of non-terminals, or could also be non-projective parsing, where you have rules with more than one span in one language and you're combining them. Okay, so so we're going to use tree decomposition to do that. So tree decomposition is a concept from graph theory. So here's a graph, and here's a tree decomposition of the graph. And finding a tree decomposition means finding some way to arrange the graph so it looks like a tree. Okay, so I've drawn this graph so that it kind of has these three branches, and each branch is not—it's not one chain; it's sort of a width two chain of some kind. And so the tree decomposition itself is it's a tree of clusters of nodes from the original graph. And so the clusters of nodes, I've drawn them as circles here. And to be a valid tree decomposition, you should have the property that every edge in the original graph should end up inside some cluster. So both endpoints should be inside some cluster. So every edge has to land somewhere. And a vertex in the original graph, it can be in more than one cluster. So we have B here and B here, or we have C, C, C. But all the places that it appears should be connected in the tree decomposition. They should all appear as some connected subtree of the big tree. Okay. So for a graph, for any graph, you can find some. You can find a tree decomposition, but the width of these branches is going to depend on the graph that you're given as input. Okay. And
then yeah. Actually, you have each node in the tree has just exactly three vertices from the original graph.
That's just a. That's just this example. Yeah, yeah. So we they don't have to have the same number of vertices. The goal is to try to keep them as small as possible.
Because the real rule will be that all the nodes in the tree in which a node in the original graph appears be a subtree. So you can stick it in some place to make it.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, so tree decomposition is—it's used a lot in machine learning graphical models. So you have the junction tree algorithm is what that's called in graphical models, or more generally, it's used in constraint satisfaction. So I'm going to talk about it in terms of three sets. So imagine that you have a big three-set formula, and you want to find a satisfying assignment to the variables. So you can take that formula and draw it as a graph. And if the graph has a good tree decomposition, then you can find the satisfying assignment. So if you take a three-set formula, each variable in the three-set formula is some node in the graph. And then two variables are connected if they appear in the same clause. So the graph represents the interactions between specific variables in the three-set formula. And if you have a three-set formula that ends up looking exactly like this, and you find the tree decomposition, then you can solve the formula by working your way through the tree from the outside in. So the idea would be that if you have processed some subtree in your tree decomposition, you found some assignment to all of these variables that keeps these constraints satisfied, and you have to keep track of some node, some subset of variables, some node in the tree decomposition that connects what you've already processed to the stuff above you. And that's what you have to keep track of for your dynamic programming algorithm. And if so you are walking through this tree with your dynamic programming algorithm and the states for dynamic programming are some assignments to these variables, and so on. Okay, so you can use it to solve three-sat. If your three-sat formula is hard, that's going to mean everything's interconnected and you won't find a nice tree decomposition. If your three-sat formula is easy, that means that you have some way of making these branches not too thick and you can process them with dynamic programming. And HMMs, same thing. So the variables are a long chain that is a tree and Viterbi marches through that chain. So it's another instance of this. Okay, so to relate this to the definition of what a tree decomposition is. So a tree decomposition is some set of clusters that satisfies these two properties that I told you. And every edge in this graph has to end up in some cluster over here. And that means that when we walk through the tree decomposition, there'll be some point where we see all the variables we need to evaluate one of the constraints. So each constraint can get evaluated somewhere. And the clusters containing any one vertex have to be connected. That means we keep track of that variable's value as we go through the tree, and it has to be consistent everywhere it's used. So it gets passed along, and it doesn't get used with one value here and some other value somewhere else. Okay. Okay, so any other questions at this point? Yeah.
It doesn't.
it doesn't. It just encodes the interaction between variables. And so when we process one of these nodes, something's going to happen that's going to look at the positives and negatives, but it doesn't affect the structure of the graph. And the structure of the graph just tells you what's the clauses, what variables appear in what clauses. Okay, so we can use it for three sets, so now we're going to use it for parsing. So so I want to show you how to do the conversion to the Chomsky normal form with this method. So if we take this CFG rule that we started with on the first slide, we're going to make a graph for it. And the first step is going to be to make this factor graph. So this graph has a node for each variable in the problem, which means each index into the string, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's the circles, the squares are non-terminals. So this represents the first non-terminal, and the score of that non-terminal is a function of the two endpoints. And the score of the second non-terminal is a function of the of its two endpoints, and so on. And so the equivalent of these squares for three set would be each square is a clause, and each square is a table that's a truth table for that clause. So that's where you would have the positive and negatives. And here, each square is a table that tells you for each start and endpoint, what's the best A that I've seen so far. Okay. And then I also have a node here for the left-hand side of the rule, so it's connected to where the whole rule starts and where the whole rule ends. And this represents the fact that when after we're done recognizing this rule, we've found a new A and we have to go and record it in the chart. And so we have to have some way of accessing its two endpoints. Because C says that I've seen a non-terminal A that goes from here to here, and all it needs to know is where it starts and where it ends. And so the point is, once we get down here, we don't care what W1 was anymore, and we don't care what W2 was, or I'm sorry, X1 was and X2 was anymore. Does that it? Okay. So it's just like these nodes. They're connected to the endpoint. So each non-terminal is connected to its endpoints, and the difference is that these are inputs and this is the output. Okay, so to do a tree decomposition, we need to take a couple more steps. So take this graph, take each square and each diamond, and turn it into a clique. So turning it into a clique means, well, this is a clique of size 2, so it's just one edge here. So this is one big cycle. If you start with a CFG rule of whatever length, you're going to end up with one big cycle. And then this is the graph whose tree decomposition you find. And its tree decomposition is going to look like this. And each node in this tree decomposition corresponds to one of the steps in the step-by-step parsing for this rule. So this has the first three endpoints into the string. That's combining the first two non-terminals. This has the beginning of the whole thing and the next two. So that's combining this with this. The last node is adding in the last non-terminal. And when we get to the last node, we have the beginning of the whole thing and the end of the whole thing, which is this, which means we have access to that number to go write it into the chart for the new A non-terminal that we found. Okay, so you can build this tree, find its tree decomposition, and use that as a step-by-step parsing strategy. Okay, questions? Okay, so I'll do the bilexical parsing example. So here we have the first thing that we're combining its endpoints and its headword. Second thing that we're combining, its endpoints and its headword. And there's three factors involved. So these two factors tell us what's the score that I found so far in my chart for these two items. And then this factor says, how well does this head match with this modifier? Like, how well does drink go with beer? How well does eat go with sandwich? And it doesn't depend on the endpoints. So it's not connected to these variables. It's only connected to the head and the modifier. And so if you apply the same process, so take each square, replace it with a clique, you get this, find its tree decomposition. You get two nodes in the tree decomposition, which are the two steps in the step-by-step processing that I showed you. OK, so let's do synchronous context-free grammars. And here's the same rule with its complicated reordering pattern. And you get something that looks like a CFG rule on the English side, and then some scrambled CFG rule on the Czech side. So the pattern of these edges depends on the permutation in the rule. And whatever that permutation is, replace each square with a clique. You get some complicated thing with English boundaries, Czech boundaries, find its tree decomposition. And these are the three steps that I showed you to add one non-terminal at a time. And here you can see what the complexity of each step is by looking at how many variables there are in here. So the worst step is this one in the middle. I think it's end of the eight. And that's bad, but it's better than just applying the rule in one big step. OK, so you can do any kind of grammar factorization with tree decomposition. And the important parameter is tree width. Tree width is, for tree decomposition, how big are the clusters? What's the size of the biggest cluster in the tree decomposition? And that's the exponent in the complexity for parsing. So if you give me a tree decomposition, I can look through and see what its biggest node is, what its width is. But we want to find the tree decomposition that has the smallest width. And that's called the tree width of the graph. So if you can search over all possible tree decompositions and find the best, meaning minimum width, that's the tree width of the graph. And whatever rule you gave me to start with to factorize, the optimal parsing complexity is the tree width of that graph. So if you find its best tree decomposition, you've found the optimal parsing strategy. OK, so we need to find the best tree decomposition of a graph. And unfortunately, that's NP-complete in general. So you give a graph, and if you give me an arbitrary graph, finding the best tree decomposition is NP-complete. There's some good news. So if the tree width is k, then I can find, and so if there is a tree decomposition of width k, and there's L vertices in the graph, then I can find that tree decomposition in time L to the k plus 2. So that means the smaller the tree width, the faster it is to find the optimal tree decomposition. And so if a good tree decomposition exists, you can find it. And so how does this compare to parsing with the original rule? So that would be time n to the L, however many variables there are in our original rule. So n is the length of the sentence, L is the number of positions that are mentioned in the grammar rule. And if this is important because it means that if you can parse with the factorized rule, then you can find the factorization. So if you're willing to parse with complexity up to n to the k, I don't know, maybe you're willing to go up to n equals, or up to n to the fifth power, then you give me some new grammar rule. In general, finding its best tree decomposition is NP-complete, but deciding whether it can be parsed in time n to the 5, I can do in n to the 5 in the size of the grammar rule. So, size of the grammar rule to the 7, 5 plus 2. So the rules are smaller than the sentences. So if I can parse the sentence with the factorized rule, then I can find the tree decomposition. So N is bigger than L. Those sentences are bigger than the rules. There's actually even better algorithms for tree width. So you can do it in linear time for a fixed tree width, but there's some huge linear factor, and nobody uses this algorithm in practice. So another question would be, what's the complexity of finding the best factorization for an LCFRS rule? So finding the tree width of general graphs is NP-complete, but the graph you get from grammar rules is not an arbitrary graph. It has some properties, okay? So first let me tell you what LCFRS is. So linear context-free rewriting systems, there are very general rewriting formalism that subsumes context-free grammar, tree-adjoining grammar, combinatory categorical grammar, synchronous context-free grammar, synchronous tree-adjoining grammar. And they're based on the general idea that you have some spans and you can combine them and you can do them in any order. So the LCFRS, it doesn't cover everything that we've talked about. It doesn't include this bilexicalized parsing, but it includes anything where you have some spans and you have some pattern that tells you how they combine and you make some new spans. And so we already talked about context-free grammar, synchronous context-free grammar. Tree-adjoining grammar means you can have two spans. A constituent in the grammar can correspond to two spans in the final string, and they have to combine in this nested pattern. So that fits into the general paradigm of LCFRS. So LCFRS includes a lot of grammar formalisms. If we could factorize it efficiently, that would be great. The reason that you might think that you could factorize it efficiently is LCFRS rules have the property that if you look at one position in the string, it's adjacent to two non-terminals. It's a point where two non-terminals meet, and just two. Okay, so a variable is only used in two clauses in SAT terminology. So that could help, right? Can we factorize LCFRS rules efficiently? No, or at least I don't think so. I can't prove that it's NP-complete, but if you were able to factorize LCFRS rules in polynomial time, that would involve major progress in graph theory. Okay, so in particular, it would involve an approximation algorithm for tree width of general graphs that's better than anything we have so far, that would get you within a factor of four times the degree of the graph of the optimal tree width. So I'll tell you why that is. So it's a reduction where, so this would be an approximation algorithm for tree width of a general graph. So you give me a general graph, I'll turn it into an LCFRS rule, and then assume that I could optimally factorize that rule and see what happens. So you give me an arbitrary graph, maybe this one, and I'm gonna turn it into an LCFRS rule. And the first step is going to be just to double every edge that appears in the graph. So for each edge, replace it with a little triangle with one new vertex. And the tree decompositions of this original graph and the doubled version, they're going to be closely related to each other, and specifically, they're the same. You can sort of see they're the same here. This has some extra pieces hanging out of it for the new vertices that we added, but they don't affect the tree width of the largest nodes in the tree decomposition. So why did I double all of the edges? I did it to make sure that all the vertices have even degree now. So the new vertices have two. The old ones have twice whatever they had before. Every vertex has even degree. That means I can make an Eulerian tour. That means I can go through the graph visiting every edge once and only once. So I'll never get stuck. I can visit every edge once and no more than once. So you find some Eulerian tour of this graph, and that's going to be our LCFRS rule. That sequence is going to be the LCFRS rule. So here would be one tour through this graph. It visits some of the vertices more than once, only visits each edge once, but visits some of the vertices more than once. And then we're going to make an LCFRS rule out of the sequence. And the way it works is each vertex is a non-terminal for LCFRS. And if it appears twice, so B here and B here, that means it has two spans in the string. And the order of the how everything appears in the string is this order that we get from the tour. Okay, so you can make an LCFRS rule out of any graph like this. And then you need to find the tree width of its graph, so the graph for this rule. And the graph for this particular rule looks like this. And you can kind of see the original graph in here. So each node in the original graph, there's a clique for it now. So there was an A node, there's a big clique here, and a bunch of nodes in the new graph. Each node in the new graph is, it's an edge from the original graph, and it's a point where two non-terminals meet in the LCFRS rule. So now we have some graph where each node participates in two cliques, and that reflects the fact that LCFRS, each position in the string is where two non-terminals meet. And so this graph has some special structure. If we could factorize LCFRS rules, that would mean we could do tree width for these graphs. So if we could factor LCFRS rules efficiently, that would mean we'd find the best parsing complexity for that rule. So that's solution. And there's some way, which I didn't show you, of going back to the tree width of the original graph. So that would mean we would have some tree decomposition of the original graph that's not necessarily the best, but we know its tree width has to be, can't be less than the tree width of the original graph. And it's also not too much bigger than the tree width of the original graph. So the tree width of this graph that we constructed is related to the tree width of the original graph, and it's related through this through the degree of the original graph. So this would mean that we would have some way of finding a tree decomposition of the original graph that was within a factor of 4 times the degree of the optimal tree width. Okay, so it would be an putting this all together, it's an approximation algorithm for the tree width of any graph, and it's better than any approximation algorithm that anybody's found. So we have algorithms where the approximation constant, it's not the degree, it's some function of the tree width. It has k in it. Okay, so for fixed degree, the tree width can be arbitrarily big, and how close you can get to the optimum is a function of that tree width. So these are the best algorithms for tree width that people have found. They kind of keep pushing down the approximation factor, so log k, square root of log k in 2005. And these people, they're serious guys. So this is a well-studied problem. These methods for finding tree width, they're based on max flow problems in graphs. And so this is a fundamental problem in computer science, studied a lot in approximation algorithms. And that means that we're not going to be able to optimally factorize our LCFRS rules unless we make fundamental progress in this problem. Okay, so that's the theory. And I want to, before we wrap up, just actually do this factorization for some for some real grammar. So, but any questions at this point?
Sorry,
Yeah.
This.
Okay, so this notation, I hate it. Don't pay any attention to it. But let me draw it. So LCFRS rules, they combine some spans to make spans of the new non-terminal. Okay, so you have we have A, B, C, D. So these are non-terminals in the grammar that we're combining. Okay, and if B appeared at two points in the Eulerian tour, then that means non-terminal B has two spans in the string, and C has I don't know how many, and they're all going to get combined in some order in the LCFRS rule. And that order is the order that we're given here. So that was A, B, C. So there's first we read in the first part of A, then the first part of B, and so on. So the Eulerian tour specifies some pattern in which the non-terminals fit together.
But then B has.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's some discontinuous thing, and if it appears twice here, that means it's a discontinuous thing with two spans.
Okay. So all right. So I didn't think I understood that.
Next slide is going from this rule and making its graph. So to factorize a rule, you turn it into a graph and find the tree decomposition of the graph. And so this LCFRS rule, I need to turn it into a graph to find its tree decomposition, and the graph looks like this. So it's not the same as the graph we started with, but it's some converted form of the graph that we started with. Okay, so we'll do this for dependency parsing. So dependency parsing with discontinuous spans. So we're going to make an LCFRS grammar, and you take a dependency tree bank. It gives you a bunch of arcs like this. And we're going to make an LCFRS rule for every word in the sentence. So the LCFRS rule, every rule has one terminal. That's the word that it came from. And then it has some non-terminals that are the stuff that it's in the subtree that hangs from that word in the dependency tree. And they may be in some complicated pattern. So if you start, so you do this conversion process. If you start with a projective tree, you'll get a context-free grammar out. If you start with a non-projective tree, you'll get something more complicated out. But it's always some kind of LCFRS rule. So we can take a bunch of dependency tree banks in various languages and do this conversion process and then factorize all the rules that we get out and figure out what's the optimal parsing complexity for all the rules we get out. And people have studied these rules before, and they've defined classes of rules with efficient parsing algorithms. So tag is one example. So you can do it in N to the sixth if your rules meet some certain pattern. And this is basically some kind of extension of tag. And this is some more general extension of tag that you can parse your rules in time that depends on somehow the number of components in a non-terminal. And so you can go through your dependency tree bank and calculate how many of the rules match these constraints and fit into these classes. But the point of the first part of the talk was that you don't really need to worry about this. You can just do tree decomposition. Just take your rules, do tree decomposition, and that's the best you can do for parsing. So here's what happens if you do that. So this is dependency tree banks in different languages. I extracted all the LCFRS rules and found the optimal parsing strategy. The vast majority are N to the three, so normal context-free grammar rules. And then if you go up to n to the 6, you get 97%. And the check is kind of bad here. But actually, the worst thing is Swedish. But that's not real. So the
this is based on the actual handling.
That's right. That's right. So it's not based on a grammar. It's based on the labeled arcs that people made in the tree bank. Yeah. And so there's some crazy rule of parsing degree 20, n to the 20, that came out of one sentence in the Swedish tree bank. And I showed the sentence to Joachim Niever, and he said, it's garbage. It's not Swedish. So you can ignore this column. But yeah, you know, n to the 12, I guess, is the worst real rule that we have. And so that's it. So summarize, if you want to factorize your grammar rules, you can do it by making a graph and finding the tree decomposition of that graph. And the complexity of the best parsing strategy is the tree width of the graph that represents the original rule. Now, finding that optimal parsing complexity is NP complete in general. But you can do it, if you can parse with the factorized grammar, then you can find the factorized grammar. So that's the good news. On the other hand, if we could always find the optimal factorization for the general category of LCFRS, then we would have some huge improvement in approximation algorithms for tree width. And that's it. Thank you.